In just a few minutes, we are going to partake of the Lord's Supper, in which we remember the sacrifice that Jesus made for us on that cross. We remember the things that he endured, the pain that he suffered. But to get there and to better help us understand what's going on at that moment, I want us to go back to the Old Testament, and we're going to start in Joshua. Well, let's start in Numbers. Let's start in Numbers 14. And I want to look at Joshua. And if you're not familiar with Joshua, he is one of the men of the Old Testament who's just amazing. There aren't a lot of righteous guys, and he's one of those that's strong and courageous and leads what I would argue is the greatest generation of Israelites who is dedicated to serving God. But he starts off serving a generation that's not that dedicated to serving God, that is weak. And Joshua is sent out as a spy into the promised land. 12 spies, he's one of them. And he comes back and 10 of the spies tell everybody, we can't do it. 2 of them say, we can with God's help. And it's interesting how the people respond to that. If we look at Numbers chapter 14, starting in verse 1, then all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or that we had died in this wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us into the land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become plunder. Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? So they said to one another, let us appoint to a leader and return to Egypt. And it's in verse 6 then that we see Joshua come and respond. Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, of those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes. And they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, the land which we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord is pleased with us, then he will bring with us into the land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not fear the people of the land, for they will be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. But all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Then the glory of the Lord appeared in the tent of meeting to all the sons of Israel. And so here you have everybody saying, let's go back. Why has God brought us here? Remember what they've said. And remember that Joshua is one who stands up and says, no, no, don't do it. Joshua is a man of incredible courage. But at one moment, he sounds just like these people he's opposing. I put up here that it's Joshua's weakest moment. I don't want to argue and debate that point, whether he had any moments that were weaker or worse than this. What I'm saying is simply, this is one of his lowest moments. Not here in Numbers 14. This is one of his great moments, one of his triumphs. No, it's in Joshua chapter 7 that Joshua suddenly starts to sound like everybody he was just opposing. Because in Joshua chapter 7, look at verse 7, see if this sounds familiar. Joshua said, alas, O Lord God, why did you ever bring this people over the Jordan? Only to deliver us into the hands of the Amorites, to destroy us. If only we had been willing to dwell beyond the Jordan. O Lord, what can I say, since Israel has turned their back before their enemies? For the Canaanites, with all the inhabitants of the land, will hear of it, and they will surround us and cut off our name and the earth. And what will you do for your great name? And so now he sounds like them. He's saying, why did you bring us here, God? Why are we in this situation? Why not? We should have stayed back here. Now they said we should go to Egypt. He just says we should have stayed on the other side of the Jordan. It's the same thing. What happened? What could take a man like Joshua and bring him to a point like this? Well, I can tell you what happened to the people the first time. And I can tell you what happened to Joshua. And it's the same thing. Their hearts melted under the circumstances. So if you look at Deuteronomy chapter 1 and verse 28. Moses reviews the people's history nearing the point of his death. And he goes back and he thinks about that pivotal moment when the people decided not to take the promised land, but instead desire to flee. And what he says is, where can we go up? Our brethren have made our hearts melt, saying, the people are bigger and taller than we. The cities are large and fortified to heaven. And besides, we saw the sons of the Anakim there. And so they heard the reports of the spies, and it says, our hearts melted. And so then they said, God, why have you done this to me? We shouldn't be here. Let's leave. Not enter the promised land. Well, in Joshua chapter 7, after this great victory over Jericho, Joshua finds this small, insignificant city called Ai. He sends up a small group of men to go get them, and this small group of men isn't able to conquer this wimpy little city. And instead, they lose men. They start being killed as they flee, and they're fleeing down the hill. And I can't help but think, based on the way it's written, that the people of Israel can look up and can see their men being slaughtered as they're trying to get back. And what happens there in Joshua chapter 7, verse 5, the men of Ai struck down about 36 of their men and pursued them from the gate as far as Sherebim and struck them down on the descent, so the hearts of the people melted and became as water. Then Joshua tore his clothes and fell to the earth on his face before the ark of the Lord until the evening, both he and the elders of Israel, and they put dust on their heads. Their hearts have melted. And his melted too, and all of a sudden he sounds just like the previous generation that failed God. Why? Why did you bring us out here? Joshua's heart has melted. And what that means is, it means his heart has been liquefied, it has been wasted with disease, and he's fainting from fear or from grief. He's looking at his circumstance and he's saying, look, we don't have a walled city to protect us. We're out in the open. We have attacked a city. We have made ourselves odious to all of these people. And now we have no protection. We have no God. He's left us. And his heart melts because there is no place to flee. There's no place for them to find protection. There's no treaties they can make. They're just doomed. And so his heart melted and he prays to God in this regard. A heart melting is an awful thing, and it leads to awful decisions and painful decisions. I submit to you that suffering is simply irrelevant until it is internal. It just didn't matter. I mean, imagine if Joshua had looked at these 30-some men that had died and said, I don't know any of them. I don't care. Then there wouldn't have been any suffering. His heart wouldn't have melted. It wasn't until his heart melts that it really matters, that it has pierced him. And now this is something of significance. Take Job, for example. What if Job was like, well, I don't even like my kids, and I don't care about these things. And maybe Job had one of these circumstances where he really didn't feel much pain. Then it wouldn't have mattered. All that stuff that happened to him, it would just been insignificant. But it's not until it pierces his heart. That's when it's really suffering. And it's why we don't always understand what other people are going through, because you don't see what they're really going through. Even if it may seem insignificant to you, if it pierces their heart, it is tremendously significant to them. And so what does it say about Job? Well, it doesn't use the exact same word, the exact same term, that his heart melted. But instead, what he says is, here's something God had done to him. When God had taken everything away from him, his family, his circumstances, everything was just gone so quickly. One of the things he says about what God had done there, he says, God, it is God who has made my heart faint. He has pierced him in his heart. This is typically a description of someone who faces the wrath of God. So if we go to Joshua again, the people of Jericho, their hearts melted. Yes, they were behind walled cities, but they heard about the people of Israel coming. And so it says that their hearts had melted. And so Joshua chapter 2 and verse 11, as the spies are talking to Rahab, Rahab describes the people's circumstances, how they feel right then. It says, when we heard it, our hearts melted with no courage remained in any man any longer because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and on earth beneath. She was aware of the fact that you people are the ones who destroyed Egypt. You crossed the Red Sea and destroyed that army, and now you're at our gates. And it says, our hearts have melted. And you know what it made her do? Now, we look at it from a whole different perspective. We look at it from saying, she served God. She showed faith in God. And that's all true. But that's not how it would have seemed to their perspective in Jericho. She became a traitor. She betrayed their people and let the spies go. Because their hearts had melted. Well, and then in Joshua chapter 5 and verse 1, the kings of Canaan, same circumstance. Now it came about when all the kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan to the west and all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea heard how the Lord had dried up the waters of the Jordan before the sons of Israel until they had crossed, that their hearts melted and there was no spirit in them any longer because of the sons of Israel. And then God sends prophet after prophet after prophet talking to various people, and he's saying, look, you guys may be in good circumstances now, but your doom, your destruction is upon you. Darkness is unavoidable. Your hearts will melt over and over again. So in Isaiah 13 to Babylon, he says, your hearts are going to melt. In Isaiah 19, he talks to the Egyptians. He says, your hearts are going to melt. To the Ninevites and Nahum, he says, your hearts are going to melt. And in Ezekiel chapter 21 and verse 7, Ezekiel has just told them the sword of God is aimed at Jerusalem. And our hearts will melt. Other descriptions are things like our knees will knock. There will be no strength. We will be demoralized. A melted heart is a horrible thing. So then consider that Jesus at the cross is not just enduring external suffering. Psalm 22 is an incredibly important psalm. It is a psalm in which we see the perspective of Jesus prophesied of what he was going to be experiencing at the cross. We're so familiar with the very beginning of it because it's what Jesus cries out while he's on the cross. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? And you can hear in this despair. And we've seen and we've looked at this on multiple occasions at various verses within there. We've looked at the idea of how he could count his bones and they were all out of joint. About how they look. They stare at me. About how they mocked him. But in verse 14, my heart is like wax. It is melted within me. When we see Jesus at the cross, the description of what happened to Joshua and what happened to the people of Israel and what happened to Job and what happened to the people of Jericho and the people of Canaan and the people of Babylon and the people of Egypt and the people of Assyria and the people of Jerusalem, when their utter despair came showering upon them and their hearts melted, that's the description that is used of Jesus as he approaches the cross. My heart is like wax. It is melted within me, liquefied. No more strength. In Isaiah 53, he's referred to as the man of sorrows and grief. In Matthew 26 and verse 38, as he approaches the cross on this night in which he's betrayed, my soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. And then in that prayer, his sweat became like drops of blood falling down upon the ground. It's not just the nails. It's not just the scourging. It's that it got to his very heart. And his heart melted. And now think of this. The mighty Joshua. What did he do when his heart melted? What did the people of Israel do when their hearts melted? everybody, when their hearts melt, they do the wrong things. They make the bad decisions. They show, they cry out, they weep, they quit. And Jesus stood up with a melted heart, and he endured the cross for us. And so we partake, remembering that even though his heart melted, he didn't quit. He offered up a sacrifice for us. And so we remember the bread, which is his body, and the fruit of the vine, which is his blood.